Welcome to the weekly podcast from the Church of England. This week we'll be hearing about the findings of an inquiry into food poverty and learning more about a short film that could give those Christmas television ads a run for their money. But first, Church of England primary schools have secured some of the best results in the country, according to league tables released by the Department for Education. The Church of England's Chief Education Officer, the Reverend Nigel Genders, gave his reaction.
I'm delighted that so many Church of England schools feature so well and so highly in these new tables. Six of the top 10 performing primary schools are Church of England primary schools, and that just shows the quality of practice that's going on in Church of England primary schools across the country. Of the top 100, 50 of those are Church of England primary schools. Again, there's excellent practice going on. And what's particularly gratifying is that these are schools that are serving their local community, that they're supporting people from across the whole range of that community. So in the highest performing school in the country, Hampden Gurney Church of England Primary School, it secured that fantastic results and those fantastic outcomes, even though there's such a significant number of disadvantaged pupils in year six. And that again demonstrates that the Church of England schools are enabling children to flourish and to succeed, whatever their background. I think it's about the aspiration and the commitment to excellent practice and the fact that in our schools, that Christian character which we're developing in our young people and in the whole context of the school is one that means that people have that belief in themselves and that self-esteem which enables them to really flourish and to do their very best. And we're bringing that out across the country in schools that have been run by the Church of England. Fantastic tribute to the teachers and to the leadership of those schools and to all the hard work that goes in. And the actual results, that's, you know, it's great to see that, but actually the quality of education across the piece and the broad education that we're delivering for those children is what I'm really delighted about.
The Chief Education Officer, Nigel Genders. The report of the all-party parliamentary inquiry into hunger in the UK has been published with much attention this week. The committee was co-chaired by the Bishop of Truro, Tim Thornton. The report looks at the huge rise in the use of food banks and concludes that an income squeeze, benefit delays and excessive utility bills are all contributory factors. Bishop Tim told me one of the stories they'd heard while gathering evidence.
I think it was in South Shields where we were. There was somebody who came to the hearing and had a bus ticket with him, and he got on his bus to go to an appointment at the job centre, which he had to do. There was a car crash, and so the bus was delayed. When he got to the job centre, he was 20 minutes late for his appointment, and so he was sanctioned, which in his case meant he had no money at all for 3 weeks. Now, I know the rules say that shouldn't be the case, but that's what happened to him, and he had his bus ticket in his hand, which was timed at the time he got on the bus. I just think that's an extraordinary anecdote that shows that within the DWP, we do need to have some discretion in the system, as you would have in Her Majesty's Revenue and Customs, as you would have in any, I hope, human institution. It is pressing for me to try and join up the really good work that's being done, and it is interesting, shall we say, to notice that 8 different government departments deal with these issues at the moment. So having some kind of umbrella organisation to bring people together, inevitably when more and more people are talking about something, there is a danger that there are more holes down which things can drop, and not always somebody can say that's not my responsibility, that's somebody else. So I think bringing it together and looking at food systems as a whole. And I think I would also say about the benefits that clearly a lot of the evidence shows, both from our work and from other work, that people going to food banks have been caught in problems with delays and sanctions.
And I understand that the benefits system, 16 days is the time that they would aim to get claims seen, but you want that brought down?
Yes, when we were in Birkenhead, some really nice people from the DWP, from job centres and from the various other offices came, and they said, and I'm sure that's true, that they are hitting their targets, which is that 90% of delays are dealt with within 16 days. That's great, but if 16 days is a long time if you don't have any money, and of course what happens to the 10% who don't meet that target? So I think we would like to look again and see what might be done about those issues.
And what's the idea behind the national organisation?
It's, as I say, primarily it's about actually trying to bring people together and notice that these issues, I mean, food banks themselves, if we're not careful, could be part of the problem rather than part of the solution. So a hungry person comes through the door, you give them a box of food, problem solved. Well, of course, it's not like that. Human beings are much more complex. And the food system as a whole is complicated. So at the moment, when you go into a shop and buy food, part of the money that you pay is ensuring that there's some waste in the system. That can't be right. So there's some issues about the food suppliers. In Cornwall, 800 tonnes of potatoes were ploughed back into the land just two or three months ago. That can't be right. So we'd like to look at these issues, but not as single one-off issues, but try and get the whole system looked at and getting people coming together.
How do you maintain the momentum?
It's really important that we do. I know that the MPs from different parties are going to try and put questions to the Prime Minister and also to have some sort of debate in the House of Commons. We hope to have a debate in the House of Lords. More importantly, in a way, we're going to have a meeting of this Feeding Britain early in the new year to try and get together. A lot of the organisations that were represented at the launch on Monday have already indicated they'd like to be part of that. Things like Magic Breakfast, a fantastic organisation. The Oxford Food Banks, which actually isn't a food bank, is a waste system. Some people like that have got energy, they've got ideas, they've got initiative, they've got imagination. We need to get them together, both nationally and then regionally, and see what we can do. And we need to keep the pressure up on politicians, the food system and food suppliers and other people.
A lot of people have been saying in the press that this shows some kind of split between the church and the government. I mean, how do you see it?
I was asked this at one of the media interviews I did yesterday. I mean, for me, there is just no split at all in that, you know, we are involved in politics. I want things to be done. Now, whatever political party wins the next election, there'll be things I'll agree with and things I'll disagree with. It was important for me to notice, and some people said when we launched this inquiry back in whenever it was, that you wouldn't keep the political parties together. We signed a report that was unanimous, with Conservatives and Labour politicians agreeing on these matters. I think it's been good to see that the government, and I understand the Prime Minister said it was a serious report. We've tried to make sure this isn't simply pointing fingers and blaming. We make that point in the report. This is very much about saying, how can we together do something about this scandal of hunger in our country today?
Bishop Tim Thornton. And you can read the full report on food poverty by going to the Church of England's website. The government's announced that £15 million is to be made available to churches to repair their roofs. Grants between £10 and £100,000 will be available to listed places of worship of all faiths and denominations. Janet Gough, the Director of Cathedrals and Church Buildings, is delighted with the news.
This is specifically to address the principal cause of what makes buildings unstable, which is water ingress. So it's for fixing roofs and fixing gutters and nothing more. There are a huge number of churches that could apply. I think doing the sums that we might get 250 grants out of this, but this could really help some very urgent cases, and particularly cases where the communities have got real financial need and have never applied perhaps for a Heritage Lottery Fund grant before.
It's not that long ago that we had the at-risk register as well. Tell me a little bit about that.
Well, the at-risk register is something that English Heritage manages, and for the first time this year we've got churches comprehensively included on the at-risk register, and there are 887, which is not too bad a number. That represents about 6% of the total of all church buildings. But this fund, combined with us encouraging people to really focus on good maintenance regimes for their church buildings, simple things like just clearing out the leaves about this time of year to stop the gutters getting blocked, I think could really make a difference.
But with over 800 on, that seems like not everybody's going to get funding this time, are they?
Certainly not, but this is a start, and there are other funds. The Heritage Lottery Fund runs something called the Grants for Places of Worship, and you can actually get larger amounts. It's a more complicated application process, so at least this will kick-start people into thinking that they really can do something about what have appeared perhaps to have been intractable problems.
If people want to apply, what do they need to do?
It's very simple. The only problem is that you need to have applied by the 30th of January. Everything you need to do, you can access on the ChurchCare website. We've even got a dedicated person on the end of a telephone, and you can get support from your diocese. I think psychologically this will be fantastic. It'll tip the balance. It'll stop people feeling, oh my goodness, this is such an encumbrance, to thinking, oh gosh, we can do something about our building, and help them to move on to think about imaginative ways in which they can better use their buildings.
A service has been held to mark the 50th anniversary of Martin Luther King preaching in St. Paul's Cathedral. His visit came 5 months after the momentous signing of the Civil Rights Bill in America, and the service was attended by a congregation of 3,000 people. One of the people at last week's service was Anglican priest Garth Hewitt, who was at Dr. King's original sermon 50 years ago.
I was 16 at the time, and I'd been watching Martin Luther King on the television. I'd been fascinated. Here was a man who would kneel on the street, and they'd turning the water cannon on him, setting the dogs on him. I thought, what courage, what an interesting person. It seemed obvious to me that the struggle was the right struggle, and I wanted to hear him. And so I asked my friends, come with me. This guy is coming. But no one wanted to come with me, so I came on my own. And it was, I had heard his speeches on the television. I liked his oratory. But the challenge to be committed to justice was sort of resonating with me. And I felt I needed to hear him, and this would probably be the only opportunity I got. I loved the completeness of it. He was talking in a way, the height, the breadth, the depth of life, the way in which the world that God was created would not be uneven, would not be incomplete. There would be an equality about it all. And then he was motivating us to live that way. And for me, it made sense of Christianity. That was a very important moment for me. And I've tried to live out those aspects, and particularly the social justice and so on, as part of what I've done since then. And if there's a sermon that's influenced my whole life, this is the one.
A new booklet has been published to support Christians who are in the second half of life. Seasons of My Soul has been produced jointly by the Church of England and the Methodist Church and aims to support older people in their ongoing spiritual journey. Joanna Cox explains more.
It's designed for groups of older people so that we can discuss together some of the issues that face us, particularly in the light of our Christian faith. All of us Christians are on a lifelong journey. And we talk about our whole life discipleship, how we follow Jesus the whole time, every day. If we're going to do that, obviously the way we do that means that we need to relate our Christian faith to the things we do every day. And those are going to be different for people at different stages of life. They'll be different for a student, say, or a young mum, or somebody in work. So this resource tries to help us think of some of the particular challenges and spiritual challenges that face us in the second half of our lives, maybe as our roles transition after we've retired, or maybe after the children have left home, what we do with our accumulated memories and accumulated wisdom, how we face death and dying, how we celebrate our lives now. Growing older is about celebrating our lives and about adding life to our years, not just about adding years to our life.
Joanna Cox there, and the book is available from the Methodist Church website. A YouTube film has gone live as part of the Christmas Starts with Christ campaign. It's cost a fraction of the budgets used by the big retailers for their Christmas campaigns. Francis Goodwin, one of those behind the film, explains what they're trying to achieve.
We wanted to do something that was in contrast to the glitzy million pound retail ads that were typically shown every year at Christmas. There's a big battle for share of mind between John Lewis and Tesco and Marks and Spencer, etc. So we've took the opposite route. We said, well, we want to do it something in simplicity and something that reflects what we're about. Christmas Starts with Christ. And the film does, in a very simple way, it shows Christmas Starts with Christ. It's a bit like that paint, you know, it does what it says on the tin.
Some journalists may say that you're trying to take on the big retailers that you've mentioned. Do you feel that's your role in releasing the film?
We can't take them on head on. It's a bit of a David and Goliath, but we know what the outcome of that was. You know, David won in the end, so we hope that the same will apply. We're not against people spending money at Christmas or having a good time and having parties and things like that. What we're trying to do is remind people about the true meaning of Christmas, and it's not all about spending large sums of money, often which you don't have, or doing things to excess, but to remember that the birth of Jesus is at the heart of it.
I know this year with some of your radio ads, you've got slightly quirky themes, haven't you?
Yeah, this year we've got a chat show style host interviewing the donkey about his role in the nativity, and three wise men have a chat with Herod about why they didn't come back, and also the angel Gabriel talking to the shepherds. So, it retells, what we do is we retell the Christmas story in an engaging way, particularly aimed at youth audiences, people who haven't actually maybe made up all their mind about what they believe and what they think. So we try to engage them with an element of the story that will encourage them to go and find out more, or go to church and find out more there.
That's it for this week. Next week, I'll be finding out more about the short film On Angel Wings, which is based on the Michael Morpurgo book and will be shown on BBC One on Christmas Eve. I'm Gillian Moody. Thanks for listening.